Happy Monday, everybody. Welcome into the Rundown, ESPN 102.5, The Game. We are streaming all around the world on the Game Nashville app and thegamenashville.com. How's it going? Chase McCabe alongside my good friend Ryan Porth. Elijah Campbell back at the Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Ryan, good Monday. What's up, my man?
What is up, Chase McCabe? How are you?
You know, I'm feeling good. I actually remembered what day it was, so that's a victory right there to start the week.
I know. All the days are just completely running together right now, but here we are on a Monday. We're 10 days away from the NFL draft. We've got the Nashville Sports Bracket resuming today. Lots going on, even though the sports world is still kind of at a standstill with everything going on with the coronavirus.
Yeah, man, and I really enjoyed the finish yesterday at Augusta. I thought it was really cool to see Tiger Woods put the green jacket on. Oh, wait, that was last year that they showed. But, you know, that's just kind of where we are. And I sat and watched News Channel 5 did. They're still doing their Sunday night show, and Steve Lehman and John Burton were basically, they spent the whole thing talking about the Masters and great moments and had an interview that they had done with Brant Snedeker, and I got into it, and then I got sad because, you know, I was really looking forward to an Easter Sunday finish at Augusta, but we'll have to wait hopefully until November and they'll get it in. But that's life right now, that all of our favorite events, you know, just aren't happening. But there are some plans hopefully in place for some of these sports to get things going again here in the near future. But you did mention the Nashville Sports Bracket. It is, voting is underway. We are going to have the final four determined by the end of today, Ryan. We are almost there to the final four. I'm excited.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily a surprise of who already has made the final four. After Friday's results, Steve McNair and Shea Weber are in the final four. And then today's matchups are Mookie Betts versus Eddie George. Eddie George, the one seed, Mookie Betts, the two seed, and then Pecorine as a one seed and Philip Forsberg as a seven seed. So Preds fans can jump in on that with that matchup. Titans fans, just sports fans in general. A couple interesting big-time matchups there today in the Nashville Sports Bracket.
Now, when I look at Friday's results, I do remember us having a conversation about Steve McNair and Roman Yossi.
Yeah, yeah.
And how you thought that it was going the way that it was supposed to and that it wasn't going to be very close. Ryan, I look at the final results, it's pretty close. Steve McNair won, but
did you happen to see who retweeted that poll?
I did not.
Okay.
This is news to me.
The Nashville Predators retweeted that poll. So that's how it got so close there in the finish. Like you said, when we were on the air Friday, it was probably in the 80 to 90% range favoring Steve McNair. And I think the final number was 54 to 46. But yes, the Nashville Predators did retweet that poll question. So naturally, a lot of people voted for Roman Yossi there. But either way, Steve McNair moving on should be interesting against Shea Weber. We'll see if it becomes that close between McNair and Weber like it was McNair and Yossi. And then today, I think it's going to remain chalk.
Yeah,
I guess.
I agree with that. I mean, we're looking at pretty much how we saw this thing going for the most part. I mean, Steve McNair, Eddie George, I feel like that they are destined to keep advancing. That's just kind of how I thought it would go. Now, that leads me to this question, that this is a homework assignment for you and for the listeners, because one thing that I want to get into after this is all said and done is I look at this, and a lot of the current Predators have done well. I mean, Roman Yossi, you know, makes it to the finals of the Elite Eight. I mean, he just misses the Final Four, so he has a good run. Forsberg has had a good run, but the Titans that are coming out of this thing have been the guys from the past. They've been the legends, you know, Wycheck or McNair or George. And so my question is, and Derrick Henry got upset, and I think we'll all agree that that was an upset. Who's going to be the next Tennessee Titan not named Derrick Henry that makes that kind of impact? That's something that I want everybody to think about, because that is a question that's been on my mind for for a long time. I know we're always going to recognize, you know, the guys of the early days of the 99 and the 2000 season because of the groundwork they laid and the success that they had. So they're always going to have a special place. But what is it going to take for some of these other guys to make that kind of impact? I want you to think about that.
Yeah, I think you just said the most important thing of what is it going to take? Not necessarily who, but what is it going to take? Because all of these vintage Titans were a part of not only the one run to the Super Bowl, but a very successful five-year window as they went from the Oilers to the Titans. When you think of 99, 2000, 01, 02, and 03, when you think of those 5 years, four of them they make the playoffs, and very good teams in those four years. I know 01, they dealt with some injuries and some bad luck and some underachievement. But overall, I think it's all about what is it going to take and not necessarily who. And yes, the Titans just went on a great AFC championship run where they get bounced by Kansas City in their first AFC title game since January of 03 against the Raiders. Now I think it's all about, can this core group sustain it and have another one or two deep runs, including a trip to the Super Bowl? And then I think you can start talking about Derrick Henry being in the conversation of Eddie George. You can start having conversations about Ryan Tannehill, maybe not to the level of Steve McNair, but if that were to happen under Ryan Tannehill's direction, I think Tannehill then becomes one of the greats in Titans history. And then whoever else may be in that conversation, an A.J. Brown or Jeffrey Simmons on defense or Kevin Byard on defense as well, the linebackers, the great young linebackers like Landry and Evans and Jayon Brown, then I think we're talking about all those guys and maybe a couple others being in a similar conversation as the names that you mentioned just a moment ago.
So think about that, and we'll discuss that when the bracket is all said and done. A couple of news and notes for this Monday, some sad news. Ian Rapoport of the NFL Network tweeted out about 30 minutes ago, Ryan, that former Seahawks quarterback Tavares Jackson died last night in a car accident in Alabama. He was working for TSU. And so Jackson, who was 36 years old, was the quarterback's coach at TSU. He also played for the Vikings and Bills. So at the age of 36, Tavares Jackson dies in a car accident. Just sad news coming out of Alabama.
Absolutely. Jackson also played with the Seattle Seahawks. He was a second-round pick back in 06 of the Minnesota Vikings. Didn't have an overly successful NFL career. There were really only two seasons in which he was a starter. And he was in the league for, it looks like, about 10 years. But very sad news. Our thoughts and prayers go out to his family and the TSU football family as well.
Another story that is out there, NASCAR driver Kyle Larson is in some hot water this morning. You know, I've been telling you guys, Ryan, about the iRacing that they've been doing, and this is online racing, and Kyle's a big part of that. Well, last night, there was a race, and he used a no-no word. He used a racial slur during, and it got caught. You know, microphones catch everything, and so he got caught saying a racial slur, and so he is obviously in some trouble today because of that, and that is blowing up on Twitter. I tweeted out the story, and I want to get your quick opinion on this before we move on. When something like this happens, I always err on the side of caution because I was taught in school that as a responsible journalist, you say allegedly. I mean, that you tweet out like that, this is the story, this is what's being reported, he allegedly said this, and I'm getting blown up for using the word allegedly. That, well, the evidence is there. Like, okay, I see that, I read that, but responsible journalism, I think we've been cooped up too long, the fact that you're mad at me for saying allegedly. Your thoughts?
I don't know if I have any thoughts on this one, Chase. I think you're kind of on your own island.
Yeah, well,
what was this in context to?
I mean, it was the Kyle Larson story. I said,
oh, okay.
I said, well, it should be interesting to see what happens with NASCAR driver Kyle Larson. He allegedly used a racial slur while iRacing on Sunday. okay, well, and people are coming after me saying, well, like, well, why did you say allegedly? I mean, it's there. I'm like, oh, okay. I mean,
well, why would you say allegedly?
Because that's what you're supposed to.
If he said it, it's not alleged. It actually happened.
But I don't have the evidence in the tweet that he said it. So, I mean, the and everything is all hearsay. I mean, there's transcript, but I haven't seen any audio or video of it. So,
oh, he said it. I'll help you out here. He definitely said it.
Okay. Well, then there you go.
So there ain't no allegedly about it, Chase McCabe.
But why focus on me? That's my question. Like, why come at me? Like, the dude said the word. Okay, so I said allegedly. But I don't know.
Because you're easy to pick on, Chase McCabe.
Yeah, I know. Well, you people out there, stop it. Stop picking on me. I've been cooped up just as long as you have, and I'm sick of it too. So speaking of some good news, we'll move on. The NHL, we've been discussing, Ryan, that they have been looking at potential, you know, plans to be coming back. I know Greg Wyshynski joined Jared and the GM on Friday, and we'll hear from him when we come back in the next segment. But some quick thoughts of as this continues to evolve, you know, the North Dakota idea was out there. Now it seems, Ryan, that they could be taking bids from other cities to try and get their season resumed.
Yeah, and I think this may have a little bit more meat on the bone than the MLB in Arizona idea. And that's all because, you know, Bill Daly spoke candidly to Greg Wyshynski and Emily Kaplan of ESPN about everything. And the fact that they are taking offers from other cities to be potential hosts for neutral site, either regular season and or playoff games in an attempt to close the 2019-20 season. And among the reported possible locations for those neutral site games, which would be held in empty arenas, Grand Forks, North Dakota, Manchester, New Hampshire, Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. Easy for any of us to say. Bill Daly did say the NHL hasn't created the field yet in determining which sites would work. But the objective of the NHL is to restart this campaign and finish the season and hold a Stanley Cup playoffs. What the playoffs look like, we don't know. I think there's a lot of ideas out there in terms of how to conduct the Stanley Cup playoffs, but certainly an interesting piece of news coming out. I believe it was late Friday afternoon when this was reported, and then Greg Wyshynski joined Jared and the GM shortly thereafter, and we'll hear that audio in the next segment.
We will do that when we come back and discuss we'll give our thoughts on what we think they should do. We can also hear from you, 615-737-1025. You can text us or you can call us, as always, at 615-737-1025. It is The Rundown on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Does it sound to you like the NHL is jonesing to figure out any way they can finish this season and play?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, and, you know, the thing about the NHL that's different than these other leagues is that their television contract is not what the NBA's is, not what NFL is, not what NBA is. They are very reliant on gate revenue, concessions, parking, that kind of thing. So they're going to take a bath regardless, right? But if they feel is that if they can get regular season games played, if they can then move to a postseason tournament, either 16 teams or more than that, they're going to be able to at least put a tourniquet on the bleeding for their franchises this season. So, you know, there's the financial impact of it, but also I think they feel that if there's enough runway, if they can come back and play games in July and August, that there is the opportunity to complete the regular season, that we have about 189 games left, and then play a postseason tournament and go right, basically, you know, take a month off and go right into next season without harming the schedule for that season.
ESPN's Greg Wyshynski with Jared and the GM on Friday. Welcome back in to The Rundown. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Elijah Campbell hanging out with you. So, Ryan, you listened to that, and there was one big thing that stood out to me, and that was the TV contracts, because we all know that the NHL, they don't have the TV contracts, like he was saying, similar to other sports. So I do believe that that is of great importance to them to try and finish out this regular season. Plus, the more I kind of see things from other players, I think they would like to try and finish the regular season to give them some warm-up time. What were your thoughts on that?
I agree with you. What I would say is that I think they're the concerns that we stated last week over Major League, the proposal of Major League Baseball starting their season in Arizona, I think we would have to bring up all the similar question marks with this NHL idea in either North Dakota or New Hampshire or Saskatoon. I think we would have to bring up the fact that if these are going to be official NHL games, you can't just have it be the players and a coach. I mean, you're going to have an ice crew. You're going to have some officials with the National Hockey League there for, you know, scorekeeping purposes.
Media.
A select number of media. Do the families travel with the players to these places? And are there enough homes/hotels /Airbnbs, whatever, for all of these families to be there with the players? And I think something else that was brought up in the article from ESPN.com on this is, you know, what if a player opts not to return to action because he's concerned about the well-being of him or his family during this pandemic? That's something else to consider as well.
Well, stop right there, because I think that is probably one of the biggest points that I think we overlook. Now, my counter to that is going to be, is the player Connor McDavid or is the player, you know, Bob Dilfrey? I'll just make up a name. Like some guy you've never heard of.
Great name there.
Yeah, thank you. But do you see what I'm saying? That's important because if it's Joe Schmo, then okay, nobody cares. Like it's not going to stop anything. If it's Connor McDavid, then you're going to have everybody have to stop and get back into a room and talk because that's going to change things.
Well, does it? I don't know if it truly does at the end of the day. If the NHL is hell-bent on having the regular season conclude and they have talked with medical officials and the medical officials have cleared an idea like this, then I think the NHL approaches the players and says, the Players Association, and says, look, this is something that we can do. It is up to your players individually to decide whether or not they want to do this. And if there's a majority vote with the Players Association to do it, but there are a select number of players that don't want to do it, then I don't think someone like a Connor McDavid saying, you know what, I don't want to go to North Dakota and do this because I'd rather stay quarantined until the threat is minimal throughout this whole pandemic, then I think you just go on without one of your best players, just like they do in, say, an
All-Star
game.
So you think the Edmonton Oilers are
going
to just be like, yeah, sure, you know, he doesn't want to do it. We support him. We're going to go on without him.
Sure.
You think they're going to do that?
Yes.
And you think they're going to do it willingly? I think there's going to be pushback. That's my point. I believe.
Oh, is there going to be pushback from the – I don't think there's going to be pushback from a lot of the teams themselves, from some of the individual players. I mean, perhaps, but I don't think that should stop the team from going forward. Look, if it's Connor McDavid's decision to do that, then more power to him. You know, it's kind of it's not the same, but it's similar to when the Olympics didn't have NHL players and, you know, there was this threat of Russian players or European players going over to the Olympics and from the NHL and participating and taking 3 or 4 weeks off from their NHL team. Well, it's not like the Washington Capitals were just going to stop their season because Alex Ovechkin wanted to go play in the Olympics, you know?
Right.
Like,
well,
if Connor McDavid doesn't want to go to North Dakota and play in the pandemic, and we're only using Connor McDavid's name as an example in this, then I don't think the Edmonton Oilers are going to turn around and say, you know what, we're going to bow out of this and then affect the rest of the NHL while doing so.
Well, and here's where I see this being an issue. The Edmonton Oilers would have no choice. They would have to go on without him. I mean, they're not going to just say, hey, you know, we're not going to play because the league won't allow it, and that would be, you know, silly from a business model for them to do that. The Players Association would then probably, you know, come out and say, well, hey, we support him, and You know, there are some others that have reservations about this. So that starts a discussion. But then I think you would have the Oilers, or you would have others within the league saying, well, if not everybody's on board, is this really the right plan? You know, and who knows what it means for the future? Would it stop everything? You might be right. It might not. But I do think it would put a black cloud over it, and the NHL doesn't want that. They need everybody to be on board. They need everybody, you know, they need solidarity in all of this to get this going. So then the fans that aren't going to be there and are going to be upset that they can't actually attend these games, and we all know why, and it's a bigger picture, it's a greater good, but they need everybody to have that positive attitude. And if you have one guy that's a big name that says, I'm not doing it, then I think that creates more problems than they want. That's just my opinion.
I think it would take more than just one star player.
Chances are it would be
to create what you're discussing. If Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews and Alex Ovechkin and Sidney Crosby and Henrik Lundqvist. And
bring it close to home. Let's say Roman Josi. Bring
sure.
it close to home.
All right. Well, I'm just saying from an NHL point of view, if all these star players are like, yeah, you know what, I just don't want to do this, then not only could it be the star players that say this, but then their teammates might look at it and say, you know what, I'm going to follow the lead of our captain and just play it safe. Then I think that domino effect has a greater effect on the NHL than if it's just one star player that says, you know what, I'm good. I'm just going to stay quarantined. I think it would have to be almost like a mass exodus, and then the NHL goes back to the drawing board and says, you know, either we have to push this back into July or August, and maybe that's when this plan would take place. I don't know. Or then they have to consider doing the ominous route, and that is canceling the season, the rest of the regular season and the postseason without having a champion.
Yeah, and nobody wants to see that. That's why I think the positive in all of this is the league has to, all the teams have to be on the same page. The owners have to be on the same page, and the Players Association has to be on the same page with the league. So they all have to agree on this. So I'm throwing out worst case scenarios, but I think about those things. I try and look at what all could possibly happen, and then you're prepared for every scenario. Greg Wyshynski.
But I think it has to be a vast majority of the Players Association. You're not going to get a 100% approval rate on this with, you know, the amount of players that are in the National Hockey League. It would have to be an 80-85% approval rate from the players. If it's only a 60 or 70% approval rate, then we're getting into the conversation that we just had of the domino effect that's taking place. And I think something to consider as well is, you know, the family portion of this. Do the players want to leave their families for this idea? We don't know. And I think the other thing to consider here is the players, what if they have no desire one bit to play in an empty arena? You know, it may not be a health issue that a Connor McDavid or an Austin Matthews or Sidney Crosby is concerned about. Maybe they just don't want to play in front of an empty arena because it's not going to be even close to the same in terms of the environment.
Well, and I
think you have to consider that too in terms of the vote from the NHLPA.
It's the environment. Like, I talked to Hal Gill and Chris Mason about this on our Game On Demand that you can see on our YouTube page that we posted over the weekend. And one thing they brought up is the chirping. And you may sit there and hear that and laugh and go, oh, well, I mean, chirping happens all the time. Yeah, but you don't hear it all. And they're going to have microphones on the ice. You're going to have television coverage. And so there are going to be some things that are said that they don't want getting out. And that's something that they're going to have to live with. So that's a part of it. And the big part, too, is the environment. You have that energy. You know, Chris brought that up. Hal brought that up of it's going to be completely different because you feed off the energy of the crowd, and that can, if you're kind of in a rut during a game and the crowd gets behind you, that helps, you know, pull you out of that rut. So I think that is all, you know, very, very fair as they look at this and these scenarios. Wyshynski went on to say when he was on with Jared and the GM, he gave his thoughts on what he thinks the NHL is doing by talking about neutral site games and taking bids for them.
I think what the NHL is doing in you know, talking about these neutral site games and taking these bids from places that maybe want to hold them is, you know, they want to go to places where it's not going to be in a major metropolitan area. They're not going to further tax, you know, any resources, police departments or things like that, that are already being taxed during the pandemic. And they also want to go to places where they might be able to control the environment and the conditions better. I mean, if you go to North Dakota and play games at their hockey arena on campus, you know, in theory, you're probably housing some of these teams in the dorms, you know? So, like, they might have a little bit more of an Olympic Village kind of feel in some of these places than others.
I think that's what they're going to have to do, Ryan, is they're going to have to go to either a university or some facility that has dorms, like he's saying, where you can live on campus, so to speak, because then the NHL has full control. As for the families, you brought that up a couple of times. Do you bring the families? I would vote no, because you're just adding another layer of things that you have to control. I know you're asking them to be away from their families for a long time. That's obviously something that they would have to agree upon and have to consider. You know, the families, I think, should have a say in that. But, you know, if I'm a star player, or if I'm any player in the league, and I know I have young children, and I'm bringing them into this commune or whatever you want to call it, this campus, and everybody's going to be sequestered together, I'm still going to have a worry that, you know, they were safe at their house. My family was fine when we were all at our houses. So there's going to be that added layer of pressure of having everybody together. So I would say just the players, but again, that's something they're going to have to agree upon.
Yeah, for 2 to 3 months, I think that's a little bit of an easier sell than the MLB in Arizona idea, where it could have been double that time. You know, I think with that, with the Arizona plan for Major League Baseball, or proposal, I should say, I think that is a much bigger issue for the players than this one, especially if you only finish the regular season. Then you're talking about 2 to 3 weeks of games for half the league, and then they go home. So half the league would be back at home after just 2 or 3 weeks of action in North Dakota or New Hampshire or Saskatoon if this were to move forward.
As we wrap this part up, do you think it's imperative for them to finish the regular season because of everything we've talked about?
Imperative compared to what's going on, I would say not quite. Look, everyone's health is the most important thing out of this, not finishing NHL regular season games, as important as that is to the economics of the league and the teams. I think the economics, especially within a TV deal, of getting the playoffs in is a much bigger deal than the regular season. And the fact that the Olympics have been moved to 2021, opening up, you know, all that time in July and August on NBC and the family of networks, I think that is a real deal when it comes to trying to finish this 19-20 regular season and or postseason. Because then that is another incentive for NBC and the NHL to get this done.
I would agree with that. So if this is going to be an ever-changing story, as it has been since all of this started, it's hard to believe it's been a month now since we last had sports.
I mean, it feels like 6 months.
It feels like forever.
I know.
It feels like forever. But, you know, I actually had a dream last night that I was at Bridgestone Arena it felt like a playoff game. I guess that's what it was.
Well,
because it was on my mind. But
we could have been there last night for a playoff game, or tonight or tomorrow night.
Yep, I know. That was the depressing part. I was talking to when I was talking to Chris and Hal. It's like, man, we could be in Vegas right now.
Yeah,
Vegas. Like, this is where we're supposed to be.
St. Louis, Denver, could have been any of those venues in the first round.
Probably would have had Vegas as my first vote, but you know, that's just
I wonder
me.
Why.
I can't imagine why. But hopefully soon we'll have a little bit of normalcy when it comes to the NHL and other sports. Ryan, when we come back, a Titans question that we are going to raise, and I want some audience participation on it as well. We will discuss that when we return. It is The Rundown on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Will Prince bringing us back. The Rundown, ESPN 102.5, The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app and thegamenashville.com. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Elijah Campbell hanging out with you. You can download that app if you're working from home, you're not near your radio, just download the Game Nashville app and you can listen on your phone while you work from home. Ryan, before we get into our Titans question, I did want to bring up, you know, we storms are obviously sensitive to this area, bringing those up as of late, but the Chattanooga area affected by tornadoes last night, Alabama, Georgia, you know, all around there with those lines of storms that move through here earlier in the day. So our thoughts and prayers go out to everybody affected by that. It's been a rough spring so far for weather.
Yeah, I mean, 2020 can just go kick rocks.
It can pound sand, as Robbie Stanley says.
It can kick rocks. It can pound sand. It can go to you know what. It can fly a kite. All of the above. I believe this was late Sunday night when this late last night when this happened in Chattanooga, and the reports are that at least 20 people are hospitalized with injuries, and more than 150 structures have been damaged or destroyed in, I believe, the East Chattanooga area. So, again, thoughts and prayers to everybody down there in Chattanooga that were affected. And like you said, we're certainly aware and cognizant of severe weather a lot more now than we were before March 3rd. A lot of us are, at least. And, hope Chattanooga can rebound from this.
Yeah, absolutely. So thoughts and prayers with everybody, and just hopefully 2020 needs to take a turn here at some point, a good turn. Let's get on the back nine and see what happens with 2020. So I said before the break, Ryan, that we were going to ask a Titans question, and you brought this up. This is a very good topic by you, so I'm going to let you set it up.
Yeah, well, we're 10 days away from the NFL draft, and last week, Chase, we had different discussions of draft needs versus free agency needs, and we both think that at some point before the 2020 season were to start before training camp that the Titans will address some of their needs in free agency and some of them within the NFL draft that will begin next Thursday night virtually. So the question is, if the Titans do not address blank position, we are going to be worried about this roster going into 2020. So, Chase, how would you answer that question?
I'm going to say cornerback because Logan Ryan is obviously the biggest subtraction as of right now. Now, who knows what's going to happen with that. There's still a chance that he ends up back here, but right now he's not on the roster. Sims is gone, so they've lost some of the depth when it comes to corner on this team. You're also wanting to see even more out of Adoree Jackson. I thought Adoree Jackson took some great steps in his career last season, but now, depending on what happens, are they going to pick up the fifth-year option? Are they not going to pick it up? If they don't, then this is a contract year. What's he going to do with that? And Malcolm Butler's coming off an injury. Mm-hmm. And, they paid him a lot of money, and I don't know if he's necessarily lived up to that contract yet. Now, he's made a difference at times and was having a pretty good season last year before he got hurt. So I think that they have to address that position. I am worried that they just don't have the depth with Logan Ryan being gone. So that, to me, is their biggest need, and they have to address that in the draft.
With Malcolm Butler, I thought, he's played 25 games in a Titans uniform. I would argue the second half of those 25 games have been a lot better than the first half of those 25 games. Would you agree?
I would totally agree with that.
I mean, the first 10 to 12 games for Malcolm Butler in a Titans uniform, we were really worried that it was going to be a complete bust, but he's definitely been better here late.
I think he underestimated just the learning curve with Dean Pease's defense. And he's admitted that. Like, he has said that he needed to maybe study a little bit better on some of the things that Dean Pease wanted to do. And once he put in a little extra work, then you saw it pay off. So I do believe that that had a lot to do with that.
I agree that a corner is a need within the draft. And if they address it in the first round, second round, in a middle round, I would certainly would not be surprised. But for me, if they do not address the pass rush through the draft, assuming that they don't sign Jadeveon Clowney, I will be disappointed. And I will be concerned about that pass rush going into 2020. There's a lot of unknowns with that pass rush. Yes, Harold Landry has shown promise, but we don't know what Vic Beasley is going to be. And we certainly can't rely on someone like a Kamaleh Correa to be an every down pass rusher and be an effective one at that. So I would say, and you know, to kind of piggyback off of yours, if you go get a quality pass rusher in the draft, whether it's in the first or second round, and it's someone that you can rely on for, you know, for 2 to 3 downs, then you're finding someone to go with Harold Landry and join the rotation with Landry and Vic Beasley. And if you have a quality pass rush and you can get to the quarterback, that makes corners look better. If you don't have a pass rush, it is impossible for cornerbacks to succeed. So I would say for me, putting a premium on getting a quality pass rusher in the draft for me is a pretty big priority.
I think you make some good points there. And what continues to pop in my mind is if this team that sold off Jarrell Casey for nothing to clear cap space, if they don't end up either re-signing Logan Ryan or signing Jadeveon Clowney at a free agency, that is a failure in my mind. That's a miss. And because those are two guys that are available to you, and I understand you don't want to overpay, especially at this point. Jadeveon Clowney was asking for way too much money. You know, it sounds like Logan Ryan just wanted basically a little bit above what he was making last year, so there's still possibilities there. But I feel like you have to bring in one of the two and then address the other need in the draft. The mm-hmm. problem is I don't know if you're going to have the luxury of getting that done before the draft.
Mm-hmm. No, I that's a completely valid point. And not only do you have to replace Logan Ryan or you need to find a pass rusher, you need to find a way to stabilize the defensive line. And Jeffrey Simmons and Daquan Jones, I think you can rely on those two, but you need another individual in there. So I don't know exactly who that would be via draft or free agency, but I don't think you can just part ways with Jarrell Casey and expect the run defense to be exactly what it was last year. I think you have to find another quality body to put in there with Simmons and Jones on the line.
Do you think that they're putting a little too much faith in Jeffrey Simmons right now, just after basically half a season? I know everybody's excited. I'm excited. Everyone's excited that you're going to get him through training camp and, you know, potentially have a full season with him, and he's, you know, going to take steps. I get all of that, and I believe that's true, but I think you're almost putting way too much eggs in one basket too early with Jeffrey Simmons. You agree?
Maybe, and with the trade of Jarrell Casey, you know, maybe they could have held onto him for another year to help groom Simmons and bring him along and not, like you said, put all your eggs in Jeffrey Simmons' basket. But we also have seen in the NFL, careers can fall off in a hurry, and we would all agree that Jarrell Casey took a step back last season, and this could have been the time for John Robinson to get something for Jarrell Casey, and he did. A seventh round pick, and got some cap space out of it. You know, always better to cut a player or trade a player a year too early than a year too late. So I think there's a balance there. You got to find somebody, and maybe it's within free agency where you can find a defensive lineman, or you sign Clowney and then you draft a D lineman in whatever round you address the line in the draft. I don't know, but we're all bringing up needs, corner, outside linebacker / pass rush, and defensive line that all need to get addressed before 2020 if we expect this Titans defense to be pretty good next year.
There is another position that I think is an honorable mention in this conversation. I will give you my thoughts on that when we come back. here on the Rundown. RockNashville.com is your community resource page, brought to you by 102.5 The Game and Cromwell Media. Even though we're holed up in our homes, we'll get through this, Nashville, like we do everything else, together. Go to RockNashville.com to support local businesses who are supporting you. It's the Rundown, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Continue to go to our Twitter page at 102.5 The Game to vote on our Nashville sports bracket, determining the best Nashville athlete of the last 30 years. Voting will continue through Wednesday when we crown our champion. Welcome back into the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McKay, Brian Porth, Elijah Campbell. So I said there was an honorable mention, and let me preface this by saying I do believe there are other needs that need to be addressed in the draft, and you may look at this position as, okay, maybe it's not that important, but I'm going to tell you why I believe that it is. This is the backup running back.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is a position, in knowing John Robinson and Mike Vrabel like I think I do, I'm sure they've had many discussions about it, because everything that goes into Derrick Henry's contract and the concerns that everyone has about signing him to a big money long-term deal, I think applies to having a good backup running back. And would you agree that for the last couple of years they haven't had that?
I would totally agree, and that is a position that I would prefer to address in the draft than maybe overpay a veteran guy to come in here and be the backup to Derrick Henry. And you know, and that's exactly what they did with Deion Lewis. They overpaid for him, and now he's off the team halfway through the contract. You know, Trevor Maddich of ESPN, on our Game on Demand Titans draft preview video with Trevor Maddich, Tron Davenport, and Jared Stillman. If you missed that, you can go to our YouTube channel, 102.5 The Game and ESPN 94.9, to go see that and subscribe, because we've been putting out a lot of quality videos here in the last couple weeks that you can go and digest in your quarantine time. But Trevor Maddich brought up the name A.J. Dillon from Boston College. And A.J. Dillon, a very successful college career. He would be an intriguing name to be a backup to Derrick Henry, and one that is close to home that we've discussed, as well as Keyshawn Vaughn. But I totally agree with you that you have to find a backup running back to Derrick Henry at some point.
Well, and I think anytime you mention a player from Boston College, I mean, that it's important, because Mike Vrabel obviously has connections to Boston College. He's familiar with some of these players. And so I think that's important, that he can go to John Robinson and say, hey, I've seen this kid play. I think he'd be a good fit. He would fit our locker room, fit our
team. And his son can give him all sorts of insights.
Sure. And that's what I mean. But I do believe that there should be some level of importance put on that position, because part of that guy's job is going to be taking some carries away from Derrick Henry just to preserve his career. I mean, that's something Jeff Fisher told us a few weeks ago when he was on Darren Donick and Chase, of, you know, you have to have a solid number two. The league has changed. I mean, we ran Eddie into the ground. I mean, we were lucky that we had a back the caliber of Eddie George, but, you know, it just you wear him out eventually. And so you want to give Derrick Henry a backup that you can rely upon to take some of those – take some of the workload off of him, and they haven't been able to do that here in the last couple seasons. Deion Lewis, I mean, that was a player that I wanted them to sign. I had that on my list of players that they needed to sign, and it just didn't work. So I think addressing that in the draft would definitely be the way to go. Now, you texted me last night, and you had just, you know, this is kind of the time to catch up on things and watch Netflix and catch up on things that you might have missed. The Aaron Hernandez documentary came out in January, I guess it was. I watched it when it came out, but you got a chance to see it last night.
Yes, I had not seen it, and we were looking for something to watch last night, and I had heard a lot of intriguing things about that documentary. So we watched it, and man, was that fascinating. And I thought that was produced at the level of an ESPN 3430 or even better. I thought it was really well done. I was glued to the couch and glued to the screen for those 3+ hours in which the 3-part documentary took place. And there were a lot of different things within that story, Chase, that I either didn't remember or didn't know about the whole Aaron Hernandez deal. The fact that he was at the University of Florida and, you know, apparently got away with some stuff. That was something that you had heard whispers about, or I had heard whispers about through social media or whatever, but didn't know the full story of him apparently sucker punching a bartender at a nightclub at University of Florida and got away scot-free on it. And, you know, the fact that they used his brain for CTE, I was not aware of that. And the fact that his brain showed a lot of CTE for a 27-year-old, you know, then it seemed like the documentary tried to spin it into, you know, did CTE factor into everything that went on in his life? And I kind of shook my head at that, knowing that, you know, if he did all those things at Florida and had a history of being around the wrong people before everything happened with Odin Lloyd, and even the incident that he was involved in the year prior to that, where two innocent individuals were shot and killed in the Boston downtown area, you know, I'm hard pressed to think that CTE was the main cause of everything that transpired. What really stuck out to me was the fact that when his father passed away and his mother then, I guess, started dating the husband of a cousin of theirs, just really bizarre, months after Aaron Hernandez's father passed away, then Aaron Hernandez started spending more time with his cousin, and that's when everything started going downhill in terms of him being around the wrong people. That's where he met the two individuals that he was with on the night that that he killed Odin Lloyd. Just really fascinating. A lot of different details within that documentary that I had never known. So I just wanted to share that I had watched it, and if anybody listening out there has thought about watching it and has not yet, I would definitely take the time to do so.
Yeah, it was very well done. I echo everything that you said. So I'm glad you had a chance to see it and check it out, because it's, you know, some of these stories that, you know, we hear and we cover, you don't get all the details. Well, a documentary like that allows the time to explore some of the details and okay, well, this happened, so that led to this, and then that happened, and so you can connect the dots. But I think Aaron Hernandez will always be looked at as just an interesting, sad story. Mm-hmm. And that's really the only way I know to put it. So glad you had a chance to look at that, Ryan.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I also, we finished a puzzle yesterday. It's the Titans Journeyman Joe puzzle. So we finished that. So now we have a Reds puzzle and a Titans puzzle to put up in the office man cave guest room that we have here in the townhouse.
Very cool. Yeah. Real quick, before we get out of here, we opened the show. I was telling you about the Kyle Larson situation. His team, Chip Ganassi Racing, has suspended him without pay.
Have they allegedly suspended him?
No, they have suspended him. They have not allegedly. They have suspended him without pay for what he said, and they're investigating it further. So that's
allegedly
the latest coming out. Yes, thank you, Ryan. That's the latest coming out with that. You can go to our 1025 The Game Twitter page and vote right now. Eddie George leads Mookie Betts 84% to 15%, and Pecorine 89.6% over Philip Forsberg 10.4%. So do that until 9 o'clock tonight. That is going to do it for another edition of The Rundown. For Elijah Campbell and Ryan Porth, I am Chase McCabe. Stick around. Darren Donick and Chase is next on ESPN 1025 The Game.